having to mark.
Either that or just not on your picture. Rainforest overflowing.
I didn't get that.
And it doesn't let me turn my video on.
I like the background.
So I'll mess around with this.
So.
Hey, Mark. Hey, Kyle.
How you doing? Can you hear us, Japheth?
Excuse me.
I can hear you. I think I'm weakened, but I don't hear them.
So the meeting is to talk about the sale of the land and PIDs and things like that. So who wants to take the lead on that?
Sure. I can
go ahead.
Introduce myself. I'm Ben Willett, who is a real estate advisor. I'll be here shortly. But I'm with CBRE. My name is Patrick Julin. I represent America First Credit Union in the sale of the 490 acres up on the Mesa. As you guys know, we've been working on this site for a long time. I think American First Credit Union has owned the property for over 9 years. Last year, we got the property approved with the development agreement, which really kind of set everything in motion. We were under contract with a buyer that fell out of contract, didn't perform. We're now back out on the market. We have 26 interested parties. I've toured the property over a dozen times over the last 3 weeks, and I think we're going to get probably 3 or 4 offers and select a buyer within the next 2 to 3 weeks. So I'm just here to answer any questions you guys have. The process we're going through to kind of keep you in the loop, because obviously we have a development agreement that's really important. We want to see you guys be successful.
Mark, are you not hearing anything either?
Right, I lost audio.
And I don't know why we can hear them, but they...
Sometimes the helps to log out and log back on.
You're not muted, are you? Yeah, you are. You're muted.
No, he's not.
Oh, no, that's video.
Can you guys hear us now? What's the name of that speaker?
Yeah, Link.
Yeah, Link. Okay, yeah, that's
good. Let me take it, turn it off.
Oh, no, I just turned that one on. Yeah, Link. That's the speaker that Ms. Meyer-Schrum said that shaking.
Yeah. We can turn it off, because before I put that in, before it was going through there, through my computer, I'm putting that off.
Do you want me to go for your computer again?
Yeah, let's try that. I'm just going to plug
sure.
That.
Sure. Earlier sure. This year.
Hey, Ben.
How's it going? Ben, just grab a seat right there.
Anywhere? This one good?
Nobody's good.
Nobody's spoken for it.
So as we're working out this technical issue, I was just introducing myself. Ben is a development consultant from St. George, and actually from the engineering side and the development agreement side, has worked with Matt Ince in getting this passed, and that's pretty much the initial history. If Ben wants to elaborate on that.
Okay. So just to give maybe those who are newer in here and not familiar with the history, I won't bore you to tears. I'll give you Cliff Notes version, and so but stop me if you need to ask any questions. Don't feel like you can't stop me if you need to answer something as I'm going through. So a couple of years ago, we started the process of getting a development agreement put in place as the credit union came back to start getting more interested in relisting the property. It's approximately 490 acres, and so the credit union's piece is the bulk of what the, if you're not familiar with it, what the Overlook Road bisects. And so you come in immediately off the highway to a small slice of BLM, and then there's a chunk of SITLA ground, and then from there all the way out to the Overlook is then on both sides is the credit union's piece. And so with that, we knew the biggest challenges were going to be within the getting utilities up there, and so we've been slowly chipping away at figuring out, making sure that that was going to be viable. And so we're at a comfortable spot now. We were originally going to be looking to do a tank up on the north side on one of those mesas that's just below the test site there, but that didn't become feasible because of the test site. There's a lot of ordinance and stuff that we weren't aware of that were lodged into a lot of that middle mesa ground. And BLM, by the time we went through all that, and BLM let us know that because they consulted to the Army Corps, we just looked at that area as just becoming not feasible from a time it would take to pivot to a different location that was even further away, the cost and time it would take to get through the BLM process. So working with the city, with Derek and Kyle, looking at a potential site actually on the credit union's piece that would serve most of the site from a gravity standpoint, and then have a booster pump that would suffice for probably about a third of the site that would need that booster pump. And then the sewer, as I'm not sure if you know or not, but there's a big regional line that's now planned to come from Virgin all the way down to the new Confluence treatment facility. So Ash Creek has a grant that they went through. So actually, it's a interest-free loan through a hardship program with the state that allows them to be able to put that infrastructure in. But they're basically kind of waiting to make sure what happens with the credit union and Sitla's piece, because they're going to kind of go parallel track as far as going at the same time, or roughly. They want to make sure they're going to get their impact fees, obviously, before they go pull the trigger on that loan and get, because it's a, you know, $8, $10 million project. So, and it'll all get paid back through eventual impact fees, but they want to make sure that's all coming down the pipe before they really go on that. So the other part then was the development agreement, which basically entitled the project to 1,600 ERUs. ERUs is an equivalent residential unit. And so we spelled that out in the development agreement that gave the construct of what that looked like in residential units and also to commercial, because there's a different equation to use. It's not a one-to-one translation as far as an equivalent residential unit to X amount of size, basically based on the water usage of a commercial unit. So that, but that all spells it out in the development agreement of how that translates. The other couple of high point things in the development agreement are having a certain X amount of commercial based on the net developable area, and so it spells that out. We went back and forth quite a bit with the staff to make sure we were hitting a certain commercial, minimum commercial amount, so it couldn't be all residential or all commercial, obviously. And then also making sure things like certain parts that could be nightly rental component, that could have an overlay, which would be primarily closer to the commercial areas. And then we did add a provision in there as an addendum to it to have the ability to look at a PID, which is basically a public infrastructure bond, because there's going to be so much public infrastructure that's going to be needed to get everything off the ground up there, that we wanted to look at that as a potential funding mechanism to get that public infrastructure bond in place for a potential buyer.
And that would just depend on who buys it, right?
Correct. They may or may not use it, but it's just, again, one more tool for them to have. And there's other ways out there. The state has become more creative. There's IFDs now, which are infrastructure funding. Anyway, there's a myriad of different types of bonding mechanisms, depending on how they get paid back and how long the terms are and all those good things.
The IFD, I don't believe, requires city approval.
It does not. The IFD you can do on your own because it's a much shorter term. And so, but the PID
does. Hand doesn't have to be paid.
Correct. The IFD gets paid at time of closing, where the PID gets paid over whatever, the 20, 25-year term. So basically it becomes a special assessment tax onto the individual property owners that are under the PID. And so, but it's only public infrastructure. You can't do anything of the private nature as far as like the lot development, that kind of thing. It's only water tanks, sewer, roads, that kind of thing. But the IFD it's a different mechanism, and it has to be paid back at time of closing. So that becomes like a line item on their closing docs when they go in to close. So yeah, that's kind of the Cliff Note version of the history of where we are today with the entitlement. The thinking back, it was the end of 2014. It's been just over a year now that development agreement was ratified by the council. We went back and forth for quite a while with the city attorney, the staff, and then the credit union's attorney to get everybody comfortable with it. And so that's basically going to be the governing document that will move forward with whoever ends up purchasing the property, that they'll come in with the PD. But that becomes their base document as far as their baseline entitlement. So, and yeah, I mean, that's pretty much it in a nutshell. So I don't know.
Are you aware of any legislation that might be coming down from the state as of the last little while? Well, the session, I know the session closes, what, Friday?
Well, I know.
Is there anything that is governing specific PIDs?
No, I know they were looking at some, potentially some modification language in there.
That's what I wondered.
But from what I understood, it wasn't becoming more restrictive, I guess. But they were just looking to say, okay, after so many years of having PIDs going, of what can they do to make it more, from what I understand, having better oversight over them. Because I think they felt like some of them didn't have quite as good oversight, that it may have been a little too lopsided towards the developer, that they would make sure they had more independent, whether it was legal counsel or whoever, that came in to be more like an independent auditor, if you will. So, and correct me if I'm wrong, that's how I understood it. So,
well, what it's worth, thank you. Randy Larson, Gilmore and Bell, approaching this as assisting the city, yes, right, through the creation process. I agree in general with what you're saying. There are some changes coming to PIDs, nothing that would materially change what's been described. There's some analysis by the state auditor that argues that PIDs are a component unit for accounting purposes of the creating entity. Majority of accountants and otherwise disagree with that, but there's some legislation to come that will help clarify that. Not a huge deal, okay? If the PID becomes a component unit of Laverkan City, then that means you have to add their audit to yours. It doesn't change the liability. It doesn't change that you could be liable for any of their bonds, but it's also something that cuts against how PIDs were created to be a separate entity. So there's some clarifying.
If the PID has some issues and it's part of the audit, does it potentially change the city's credit rating?
No.
Okay.
No. But what it does do is it means the city now, I mean, I'm stretching, right? I don't want to interfere with the non-liability. That's rock solid. If there's a default on the PID bonds, there's no access to city funds.
Okay. There's no recourse to the city because they're using the property as the collateral.
Well, I know, and maybe so. It's in reference to there was something that happened up north that one of them went bankrupt, and there was some,
it's a really good example,
claim that they were going to go after the city's funds, and that came through the City Managers Association. And
yeah, that was entirely false.
Okay, because that was what I would assume that anybody here on the council would have concerns.
Yeah, you would. So let me tell you about that one quickly. That was Wahali. It's a resort golf community.
That's one on Camas?
Yeah, I've
been engaged by the Federal Bankruptcy Court to list that. We have it on the market right now.
It's a beautiful piece of property. Okay, it's
like Colville?
Colville, yeah.
Colville.
Yeah, on Camas.
Colville.
Other side of the valley.
So there was an assessment bond done, right, on this property, which means instead of a property tax, there was an assessment, a method of allocation to all the properties based upon their benefit from the public infrastructure, and that's a governmental lien. So it comes before any mortgage or other financing. There's a commercial lender on the property that has already lent around $75 million. They became concerned about the finish, and so they stopped continuing to lend. There was kind of a plan that they would continue, and they said, we don't see the progress that we want, so we're going to stop. There was an assessment bond done on the same property.
Well, you know, Wahali declared, the Wahali developer declared bankruptcy. I mean, this is not uncommon, okay? And that meant that now, hey, what's going to happen to these PID bonds? Well, the answer was pretty straightforward. The commercial lender, who has $75 million at stake and doesn't want to be subject to the assessment lien, which comes ahead of them, paid the assessment. Bonds are not in default. They're, you know, but the developers declared bankruptcy. No connection to the city, no connection to their credit. But that was an example being used to say that, hey, maybe we need more oversight. And I would argue the oversight was absolutely perfect. The offering document to the bond said the city has no obligation, don't look to the city, look solely to the PID, and it operated in normal course. So it was to me a bad example of what could go wrong. Could things go wrong? Absolutely, but that was actually an evidence of what you'd expect.
Randy, can I add something?
Yeah, please.
So I will say that Randy, I agree with what Randy said, with one exception, is that from the rating perspective, a default of one of these entities not be considered a default by the city, and I think that's accurate. But if they are considered a component unit, there is a possibility that some of the rating agencies might look at that and use some of the debt included in some of their calculations of debt metrics. That's a little, we've seen that actually happen, and so from a rating perspective, there is some concern that if these are component units, which we don't think they are, like Randy said, there would be this kind of question about whether the debt itself would be included in the city's debt metrics from some of the rating agencies.
Yeah.
So that's my only clarification there.
I don't disagree. I don't think it'd be correct by the rating agencies, but we can't tell the rating agencies what to do.
Right. No, I agree with you, Randy. I think it's wrong, but we know that the rating agencies are doing that.
Yeah, so what that means is, as the city, you'll want some comfort on this component unit issue before you were to create a PID.
Okay.
I feel strongly, but I can't guarantee it, that come Monday, I can give you more comfort around that because of legislation that is
closing. Okay. Don Bean from D.R. Horton, they have an interest in the SILA piece, but do you have any insight on the PID stuff? Because I know D.R. Horton.
We use it as a funding mechanism. We have the cash, but sometimes it's better to use a PID to fund the projects.
Cheaper debt.
Yeah,
cheaper.
That's right.
Yeah, you got to look at PID as basically a financing tool for the infrastructure.
Yeah.
Right. It's a simple way to look at it.
The whole purpose of a PID, in short, is basically to be a special purpose entity. So it removes the debt obligation from the creator of it and allows that to access tax-exempt debt. Tax-exempt debt does not mean that any taxes of the city or the state, it just means the federal government will not tax a bondholder's interest earnings as taxable income. So therefore, the investors give you a lower interest rate by virtue of the preferred tax treatment to doing it. And so it's a special purpose entity, separate from the city, allows tax-exempt bonds to be purchased. And you would gauge that. I mean, D.R. Horton, everyone else is going to gauge what's the cost of a PID bond against my commercial or other funding sources.
Sure.
And routinely, this comes in significantly better, which makes hard public infrastructure runs, big burdens of that, penciled, because now I have a lower cost of debt.
I have a question, too, with the PID and our bid policy, and maybe Faye can help me with this. With a PID as opposed to an infrastructure district, with a PID you can negotiate with the developer and there can be things that could help the city with, you know, city projects or something like that that the city would benefit from as long as it worked for both the entities. Is that correct?
Yeah, I'll let Faye expertise if it's an exaction, but in summary, you're prohibited from creating an exaction, but that's related to land. That's not related
right.
to this. So yeah, there is sometimes horse trading, right? Like, hey, if we wanted this park, or we wanted
right.
this interchange, or we wanted another piece, I just would caution look at the numbers, there may not be as much use in that as you think, right?
Right.
This is not tax increment, right? Where you're giving up some of your property tax or the school district or county to go toward the development. This is the landowner increasing expenses to them for that.
Yeah, I just heard that's a possibility. And that's something that has to be a win-win for both places and stuff.
I would add that the city's adopted PIP policy identifies criteria that the city would use to evaluate any application as to whether or not it meets the city's objectives in determining whether or not they want to allow a potential developer to use this financing tool.
Yeah.
Totally agree. Yeah, you want to be consistent with that.
Yeah.
That protects you from being, you know, impartial to one particular developer or landowner or another. Yeah. Okay.
Any questions from the council?
Not yet, but a lot of it's foreign speak for me, so I'm learning.
I think the key deal is most developers that are going to go up there, there's going to have to be something that will help them with the amount of money it's going to cost to get infrastructure up there. The tank, I don't know how much it, 2 or 3 million gallon tank, and I know that D.R. Horton's got interest in that Sitla property. Has that been officially announced, or can we say that yet?
We're working on a contract right now.
Okay. You know, and there's going to be just one tank up there, so whomever gets this property is where the tank will be. And I think it was penciled in to be 2 million gallons to accommodate.
Once we took the water district, when the tank was going to be up on the inner mace of the water district, we were going to be involved, but then once we brought it down lower, they bowed out. And so
So
it'll be roughly around 2 million gallons. And
that will be for yours, but then the addition of the other property would probably increase the size of it.
It'll probably be somewhere in that 3 million. 3 to 4.
3 to 4,
you know.
How much would that tank cost?
I mean, there's a lot of variables, but you're looking at least two and a half, $3 a gallon, you know? I mean, that's going to easily be a $6, $7 million tank. But then, you know, then you have all the UDOT, so you're going to have access, and you're going to have all the widening and everything that's going to happen for at least the first access, and then there's going to have to be a second access. So the infrastructure, the public infrastructure component, is going to be very heavily loaded up front on a project like this.
Yeah. And before you even start.
Before you even turn a teaspoon of dirt to start a lot. You're
going
to probably have, and I just spitball, and you're going to have easily, you know, $20, $25 million before you even say, here's a lot ready to go.
Yeah.
So.
We spent a lot of time on this last year, and the our agreement, as far as the city goes, we haven't committed to allowing the PID, so you don't have to worry about that. But we've committed to discussing it.
To look at it.
Yeah.
That it's a possibility.
That's what it sounds like.
Yeah, because there's some municipalities that are like, nope, we're not even going to entertain it. So this was just giving a mechanism to say, yes, you can at least bring it to the table. You're not going to waste your time at least bringing it to the table.
Right.
So.
Well, and I think what put the brakes on for me is this, you know, how the word gets out that, okay, the city's now all of a sudden going to be liable. And that was, like I say, coming through the channels, and it was false information, it sounds like, but. Of course, that becomes, I felt like that was going to be something that would concern the council.
There are groups in the state that, I mean, small groups, but nonetheless don't like the policy behind the PID. A lot of that is they just don't understand, right? They feel like, hey, does this take away authority from the city? No land use authority, right? I mean, PID is simply a capital financing tool. Can it be abused, right? Can it increase taxes? No more than what the property owner agreed to and are forced to disclose to the next property owner in a very robust manner. A PID is going to be disclosed at least as well as an HOA fee. And it has a cap. HOA fees do not. Those are the kinds of things that just, you know, require a little more education. But I would pay attention, as Japheth mentioned and Mark, this component unit is an unfortunate trying to use regulatory things to create a policy that I think we've solved in the legislature. We don't want to know. You want to know what's the final impact
on that. On Monday, you'll have a better idea. I hope so.
Kyle, we got that letter from the county a couple of months ago about the higher fees for administering the PIDs. Was that just something that we handle internally, or what was that
about? I know about that, too. The county has elected to say we need a higher RIP fee to collect the taxes for a tax related to the PID. If you use an assessment, county's not involved. But if you use the property tax component, they have increased their fees, and that would need to be paid by the PID. So the PID would absorb that cost before it was paid, the bonds, all the cash.
So the city wouldn't pay that, the PID would. Okay.
Did the county say what that charge would be?
Yeah, they did.
It was pretty rich.
Yeah.
Well, they were talking about hiring additional staff and that kind of stuff. So.
Yeah. I mean, it has to stay reasonable for what it costs them. But I'm empathetic to the county to say, hey, before we had, 50 tax entities, now you're talking about maybe doubling that, and we don't have the appropriate staffing to do that. So it is. Putting everyone on notice, make sure PIDs know that amount, and Matt Entz and others are very aware where we have that issue.
Yeah. Correct.
Yeah, I always say the
credit. It's okay, they're credit. Yeah, they're credit. You know.
But one thing that I would add, and I'm sorry, I often talk too much, but
that's what we got here for.
One thing I would be recommending is a PID creation prior to development agreement is often premature. You don't quite know what you might be financing to put parameters. So I'm thrilled to know that that's in place. Does that make sense? Because the PID should not be a component of the development agreement. The PID is just a funding source for what the development agreement may require. And if we don't have that, then it's hard to know what are we telling the PID to do. So,
and our development agreement is pretty vague because we don't know who the property owner's going to be.
But at least they have to provide.
Correct.
If they're going to have any entitlement up there to residential and commercial.
Right. The most we was guaranteeing the water.
Exactly. So will the water be pumped up from here up to that tank?
Now there's a line.
It should barely feed to the tank.
There's a water line in SR9 right now. It's a water district water line. They're going to be upsizing that actually soon. But there is an existing water line that will feed to the tank from there. It won't have to come from down
here.
That water is going to be, it's not going to come from our streams, so it's going to be a different price.
Okay.
It's the district water?
It's the district water. That they guarantee.
That's that line that goes up through Virgin. I actually knew about that. I shouldn't have said that.
Well, there you go.
I know.
But you'll have to have a pressure pump to service
part of that
project.
The upper portion will need a pressure.
There's not enough
elevation. I think just on that property, I think the other property, the Sitla property, will all gravity feed too, if I under just eyeball the elevation.
Yeah, I think that one was mostly okay. There may have been one or two little tiny blip sections, but the majority of that one was be gravity fed.
Patty was hoping we'd build a big water tank way up high.
Water tower?
Yeah.
I haven't thought about a water tower.
Painted a bright color.
Like green.
Midwest.
John green.
Keep quiet for you right now.
Sure. How long have the PIDs been around?
I don't know, like four or five years?
Yeah, 4.5 years.
That's just in Utah, right?
In Utah. In
Utah. But other places they've used them, is that correct?
Yes. Many states, majority of states, have a comparable tool to what PIDs are. Our tool in Utah is a little less robust than some of our neighboring states. It doesn't have the ability to do O&M. It's not meant to exist in the perpetuity. That was intentional in Utah, but yeah, it's been around for a long time. Most importantly, investors recognize this tool and regularly and invest in it. They have a lot of experience in saying, yeah, we'll do this, and here's our rate.
So, it's a funding mechanism. Obviously it's the property owner, right, that's going to pay it. I mean, is there any downside to whether, at the end, the developer has to front the cost up front, the price is higher, or they can develop it for less, but is the property owner paying off these
these bonds, right? I mean, what does that look like to the end user? I mean, have they been around long enough?
Yes. It really depends on what source of financing was used for the PID. So let me give you two examples. The most common way is an assessment. That is not a property tax. That doesn't ride with assessed value. Okay, that's based on ERU or acreage or some form of allocation to say, here's the $10 million of improvements, and this is how we're going to divide each property up for how they pay their fair share. Okay? In that scenario, it can be paid off at any time. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. So an IFD, for example, would require that to be paid off before a homeowner could take occupancy. For commercial buildings, they can extend it if it makes sense to them. But either way, whether it's at closing or whether it's 5 years after closing on the property, you always know a payoff amount for your property in an assessment model. In those, you wouldn't expect necessarily to be a huge distinction, because it's either getting paid when you close or it's not. If it's not, you might pay a little less for the, I'm sorry, sell it for a little less. And so, as opposed to a property tax. Okay, if you have a property tax, there's a real sensitivity, because like D.R. Horton, as how much the market can bear of an increased property tax. Okay, you also have a little concern to say, they're going to come to the city and say, why is my tax higher than someone else across the street? So property taxes aren't used as often on residential components, but still are. But if they are, they're usually a very small component. That part requires robust disclosure so that every succeeding property owner knows there's an enhanced property tax on this piece. And you will see, typically over time, those homes will trade differently than someone who does not have a property. But not super significant, because that property tax is usually such a small component of the overall tax burden for the property. So I should say, you could do this across the city yourself, right? But then you'd be liable for the bond.
Yeah.
That's not something any of us, Zions or our group, would be saying, great idea, let's go help fund that. But what it does pay for is improvements that need to be paid for regardless. Okay? So this would be more of a trickle-down economics argument than a direct. If there's a lower cost of capital to deliver a finished lot, now they can do more at one time, better master planning, not have to come back and cut through streets because we're doing another 50 homes, right? They can get it all done at one time. And that allows them to sell that property less. But if they, it's not, doesn't mean they will. Right? They'll sell it for whatever the market will bear. Is that mm-hmm. fair? But yes, there is some connection between those two rules and potential future home prices as they go.
And those rates can vary, if I understand it correctly. We talked to one developer, and in our development agreement, it's known that there's going to be an element of commercial on that property, and typically what they said they do is the commercial is going to be pay a higher portion than the residential would. That's
yeah.
I don't know, can that be affected with both the assessment or
it
the
can
property?
As long as you authorize two PIDs, just as the city can't charge one property tax for this area and another one for
okay.
this one. The property tax has to be uniformly applied within its boundaries. So what often occurs is you do one PID for the commercial,
PIDs.
Another PID for the residential,
gotcha.
And they pledge it together to one bond.
Gotcha.
That often is because a lot of commercial buyers will be, I'm thrilled that I get to finance my infrastructure burden at a tax-exempt rate. Plus, they're sophisticated enough, they're not going to come whining. Residential often, if it bears any property tax burden, is lower than what you would put on commercial.
But that would require two separate PIDs.
And you get to determine the cap, right, as the
right.
city. They're limited by state law to 15 mils, 1.5%. That's big.
That's
they're probably double the property tax burden. Oftentimes, particularly if it's residential, you will as a city say, we're not they also would, I'm keeping the point of view, a lot of other people like you. They're going to have a similar interest because too high, they can't sell them. Right.
Isn't I know in economic development, we are, when we're talking about this all the time, one of the concerns that, that you hear all the time is that it, there's a potential that the home buyer doesn't, it's not like as clear as, say, a homeowner's fee or something. Sometimes this fee, they feel like it's not published as well.
Jack said that it has to be pretty robust.
Yeah, your policy will dictate some extra things above law, but I'll tell you just the legal restrictive requirement. It has to be in seller disclosure. A real estate agent has to disclose if it's in a PID. The real risk is that first buyer, okay? Because the first buyer doesn't have the historical property tax yet. If you ever bought a home or property that says last year's property tax, mm-hmm. it's going to be already embedded into that, okay? So it's that first one. So I think your policy, if I recall, and Mark and Jacob can remind me, requires that at closing for a first lot that there actually be a separate color display, even maybe a sign on the front, which all would be better disclosed than HOA fees. Disclosure is always a weak, okay? The unknowing property owner that says, dang, maybe I wouldn't have done this. But they would be no worse off than any other property tax or HOA. In fact, just for analogy, not the maybe the right answer, but by analogy, an HOA can go up as the HOA decides. These cannot. They're specifically capped. And they only can be charged in the amount to repay the bond. Bonds are paid off, tax write goes away. So I like to make that analogy to HOA. It doesn't mean that we're okay with HOA disclosure. Okay? But it's certainly better than HOA.
That's good.
I would just comment, too, as I'm talking to a bunch of different buyers on this project and other projects in the last 4.5 years since PIDs have been a new financial tool for development, there are some examples of people adding too much of a mill rate and then having that be an issue on their home sales or whatever. And I think most developers that I've talked about this piece and around the market of Utah, they're getting savvy not to push that too much, to not get too much property infrastructure fees back with the PID. There's a certain balance and a threshold that this market allows for. So, you know, maybe you do the main arterial road, you do the water and sewer system and some of the public streets and leave it at that versus expanding it to big park systems and other stuff.
Yeah.
So I think
we've seen mill rates of no higher than 6
yeah.
for residential.
Yeah,
4 or 6. Even lower. Mm-hmm. Other than in high resort, second home kinds of areas where they're less sensitive and, to that. But yeah, for a D.R. Horton home, I'm guessing that's about what you've seen in all
yes.
your experience.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, and just to circle back to D.R. Horton, so we were made aware that D.R. Horton was potentially going to get the Sitla site, and we were also made aware that our project that we're trying to sell would have some infrastructure collaboration. So we've been in contact with Don and D.R. Horton's team as we've showed it to all sorts of different buyers, and knowing that there's probably going to be a joint development plan between the Sitla piece and this piece, which is actually better for the city, better for us, better
yeah,
for...
Yeah, we're really hoping so.
Yeah.
Whoever gets it, we want to work
on. Yeah. And that'll be probably the entrances off the highway, that'll be the infrastructure systems, that'll be the design of the roads. So they're kind of sister properties that we look at, which is why Don's here today, to make sure he's in the know. But any questions from us as we're marketing it, the development process? I mean, I can tell you we're out there on the market. We're sellers. We're entertaining offers to qualified groups, and we're in that process right now. I'm not sure how long it'll take to sell the property, but our goal is to contract with a buyer here in the next few weeks or maybe months, the very latest, and move forward quickly with the closing so a developer can actually start bringing plans to the table.
Are any of the developers that are looking to buy the property, are they requesting PIDs and things like that? Or
all of them like the option of a PID. there, I don't have any definition as to how much they'll use it. There is, I mean, especially working with D.R. Horton, they've chose not to do PIDs in certain areas.
In most of them.
In most of them. But their financing structure is different. I know other developers might want to. But I think it's prudent on the developer, whoever owns this and builds it out along the city, to make sure the mill rate's not too high where it just becomes an over. Yeah, and I don't think the market would do that. Even the bond companies would make sure it's sellable. They look at all the pricing.
There's an absorption study for investors to say what's the pricing, what's the likelihood.
Yeah.
I mean, for what it's worth, coming back to the legal process, a landowner would need to submit a letter of intent to the city, and the city has a PID policy. If you don't have that, we can get it, you know, to the landowner. But that will guide the request to the city as far as mill rate, what you're financing, do you want assessment, do you want property tax. Those will be an important part of that letter of intent to petition the city for the creation.
Yeah.
The bills you're watching, are you mostly watching the Coford bill? Is that the PID bill that Coford offered, Representative Coford?
Yeah, Representative Coford's bill actually requires more robust disclosure on conflicts of interest. We were in support. I mean, for what it's worth, who cares what a lawyer thinks?
But
I didn't know if there were
sorry.
I didn't know if there were other bills you were following or if that was the primary.
That's the primary.
I'm just going to say our PID policy statement does refer to the letter of intent. Has various requirements for them to submit to the city in connection with that letter of intent and the petition to look at the PID. So
is our representative...
That's how to formally engage with you as the city is to prepare that letter of intent. You may be missing some information because you don't know who the property is. Well, the city can consider that, but just note that the letter of intent is how to officially put it into your hands about for review.
And that's what he's here for is the city. He's our financial advisor and helping with Zions Bank and stuff so that
it comports with your policy, legal, and we'll talk, help you on the component unit, the staff, JFIT. We work as a team. Designs to help you determine whether you want to improve on that.
Yeah.
And I said Horton doesn't use them often, but it's only because they don't fit financially in the development toolbox that we're looking at. But when it does, we like it.
Yeah.
It's just, it's a financial
tool. It's a tool
that we have.
Helps you got a land banking system. It's different than a lot of others.
Of the PIDs that are already in place here, like in Washington County, and I know the Black Desert had a huge PID, so the one over in Leeds.
So
they had like four in Hurricane.
Silver Cliffs.
Silver Cliffs was a very large PID. Of course, Black Desert is kind of closely developed now, but how is that working out? Do you know?
We can get you in touch and get some commentary from those cities about it. Black Desert, I don't want to speak for Ivans, but I think it's been a huge success. Now, some people don't want growth, period. And so,
not in Liberica, we like it.
I know. That's a very legitimate concern, but it runs in conflict with property rights. And I think given that combination, I think Ivans has been very happy with how it has gone for Black Desert. They've even been supportive of additional financings along that route. Silver Cliff is great. When you say the success really belongs to the burden to the developer, right? Has it been able to go vertical and create the objectives of the developer? Black Desert has exceeded expectations. I think it's too early to know on Silver Cliff.
Yeah, Silver Cliff, they're still under construction. They haven't sold a lot yet. So.
And I know Black Desert, from a disclosure back to that discussion, I've gone on just because I like to go see what other projects are doing, learn from all that. But you see right on their front page, when you scroll down and you look at a listing, and they have the disclosures of what that special assessment tax is. per unit. And so it says your HOA is this, and then your special assessment tax is this.
Yeah.
And it's they're not trying to bury it down in the, you know, 0.5 font at the bottom that nobody can read. It's pretty apparent. And so at least from that standpoint, it seems like they're doing a pretty good job with that. But again, kind of back to this point, that's primarily a second home, you know, kind of a, you know, Airbnb second home, vacation home type thing. Most people aren't losing sleep over that. Tocqueville, I know they have probably at least 10 or 12 PIDs on that new Firelight project. But that again, like up on the, you know, Mesa here, that's a huge lift of their infrastructure to get that thing to get pulled off. But Tocqueville is happy because they got a bypass road that doesn't put everybody right through the middle of their town. You know, worked out great. But I think they did at least 10, maybe even 12 PIDs for that development. And they just come online as they need them and different pods of the development. So
you would want multiple PIDs to track phasing. Otherwise, the first homeowner pays a disproportionate share of phases 2, 3, and 4.
Okay, any other questions from the council? You guys have any questions for us?
Okay.
Appreciate you coming today for this meeting, and it would be good for all of the new council members. And
yeah, it's good to have this refresher.
Yeah, we'll keep, I'm in contact with Kyle pretty regularly, so we'll keep you folks up to date as things progress. And then, you know, Patrick and I talk at least a few times a week now, and probably going to increase as the potential buyers come in more serious. So we'll definitely give you a heads up as this all unfolds. So.
Okay. If not any other questions, we'll close the meeting and move into the
Mark and Jacob.